Grant High School and all the other ones are called.
We're going to go ahead and begin. The first part is each week I ask the question of the community, how are the children? The reason that I ask that question is that when our children are cared for, when they're provided a good education and caring adults in their lives, they tend to be much more successful. And so we're going to start off with talking to two young ladies, Emma Butterfield and Sienna Lee. They're both sixth graders at the Gilkey International Middle School. So Emma and Sienna, could you please come forward? Really appreciate you girls being here this morning. And why don't you go ahead and begin, Sienna?
Bonjour. I begin my speech with bonjour because I attend Gilkey International Middle School and we are learning French. In French, bonjour means hello. My name is Emma Butterfield and I'm going to talk a little bit about what my concerns are about Portland. I think that we have an excessive amount of pollution. We need to put an end to it. It's ripping cute little animals' lives apart. A way we can stop it is drive less and walk and bike more. If you can, please walk and bike more and drive less. Another concern is the litter. We need to stop littering. Please take the extra 30 seconds to throw your garbage out, and it'll save animals' lives. Thank you very much for listening to my speech.
Thank you, Emma.
Good morning. My name is Sienna Lee. Before I start, I would like to thank you for acknowledging my views and opinion. I live in Southwest Portland, off of Canyon Lane. It is a safe and friendly environment. At home, I feel protected and among friends. The houses in my neighborhood are roomy and spread apart, the yards of ample size. One of my concerns for the community is the appearance of Portland's public areas. My main concern is the health and well-being of the Willamette River. The Willamette River was once a wild river. It ran with power and dynamic, rarely seen today. It's pushed on for 187 miles on its main stem. And over the past 150 years, the Willamette River has changed dramatically, and the river reflects this change. Cities crowded its banks, replacing once flourishing forests. Its flow has been modified by hydropower dams on its tributaries. Pollution has altered the health of the Willamette River, yet there is still some hope of regaining some resemblance of the river's former health. I believe that the river belongs to the public and should be protected as such. I understand that Portland is working on expanding the sewer system to decrease the number of sewer overflows during periods of high rainfall. Such a project, I believe, is a huge step towards restoring the Willamette's health and beauty. I want to credit the Willamette Riverkeepers for taking action on this pressing matter. They were founded in 1996, and they are the only program dedicated entirely to the protection of the Willamette River. They are supported by membership and volunteer efforts. I encourage everyone to take action as these devoted people have. The changes in the Willamette River affect our ecosystem and our city's reputation. Again, I want to thank you for listening to my opinions and hope you will keep them in mind. Thank you.
Well, thank you both. I think that's not only good advice for the folks sitting up here, but all the ones that are watching it at home as well, and all the folks in this room. In fact, some of the folks in this room are going to be talking to us about those very issues shortly. So thank you very much. And could we give these young ladies a hand? Thank you very much. Are there any Rams here today?
Yeah.
Are there any Cardinals here today? Today we are honored to have with us the first 6A champions ever from Portland, the Lincoln High School girl champions and the Central Catholic High School boys champions. Let's hear a hand. This council is very proud of you, and we know that we have a lot of great high schools here in the city, and that you folks are very representative of our community, and we want to acknowledge that. I have two proclamations to read, and first I'll ask the Lincoln High School girls team to come forward and just maybe stand up behind the microphones there. Great-looking group of people. And here's the proclamation. This is an official proclamation, so you'll hear some whereases, but it's going to get down to the really important stuff. It says, whereas Portland celebrates a rich and exciting soccer culture that attracts people from all walks of life in maintaining a fun and competitive environment for all participants. And whereas Portlanders everywhere are proud of the success of our youth and student-athletes, what are they achieving in their lives, and whereas the City of Portland rejoices in the sheer dedication to school, sport, and community that the student-athletes at Lincoln High School exemplify so well. Whereas Coach Brandon McNeil and Lincoln High School have succeeded in using soccer to instill positive life experiences for the kids of our community. And whereas Lincoln's girls' soccer team won the 2007 State High School Championship and has successfully fostered a program dedicated to excellence for many student-athletes to come. Now, therefore, I, Tom Potter, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim December 12, 2007, to be Lincoln High School Girls Soccer Day of Appreciation in Portland. And I encourage all citizens to observe this day. Thank you. And girls, before you sit down, could we get a picture? And would my fellow council members join me in this picture, please? Okay, let me come over to this side.
Eric, you blend right in.
I stand in the back, let's see.
You're the ones that kneels in the front. Okay, you guys are good.
Thank you. One more. I got the power. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I would like to recognize the Central Catholic team. Please come forward, folks. Another good-looking group of young people. Okay, I'm going to read the proclamation, pretty much like the last one. You'll hear some familiar words, but there'll be a really big change at the very end. Whereas Portland celebrates a rich and exciting soccer culture that attracts people from all walks of life and maintaining a fun and competitive environment for all participants, and whereas Portlanders everywhere are proud of the success of our youth and student athletes as they achieve great things in their lives, and whereas the City of Portland rejoices in the sheer dedication to sport, school, and community that the student athletes at Central Catholic exemplify so well. Whereas Coach Steve Anchetti and Central Catholic High School have succeeded in using soccer to instill positive life experiences in the kids in our community. Whereas Central Catholic boys soccer team won the 2007 State High School Championship and has successfully fostered a program dedicated to excellence for many student athletes to come. Therefore, I, Tom Potter, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim December 12, 2007, to be Central Catholic Boys Soccer Day of Appreciation in Portland and encourage all citizens to observe this day. Let's give these young men a hand. If I could just indulge with my council members for one more picture.
Dude, who keeps touching tail?
Stop touching.
Say stop. Oh, hello, good.
All
right. Wait.
Here we go.
Tim.
That's good.
Thank you.
It's the official proclamation. Could the team captain from Lincoln and Central Catholic please come up? Just like to say, have you say a few words. Please come forward. Okay. Why don't you just have a seat there and introduce yourselves, and or perhaps stand as the case may be. But we'll let the Lincoln go first, and then we can hear from the Central Catholic.
I'm Jane Newman.
I'm Kendall Johnson.
And what would you like to tell us?
It's just a great honor to be here. Thanks so much for having us. We worked really hard this year, so it's nice to be acknowledged in this way. And a lot of the thanks for this year would go to our coach Brandon and our parents here. So we had a really great year. Thank you very much.
And I hope next year that we can work hard and try to accomplish what we did this year. Thank you.
Hard work does that, doesn't it? Well, thank you so much for making our city so proud of the girls' Lincoln team. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And also, I'd like to thank Coach McNeil. He was selected as the PIL Coach of the Year. So, thank you, Coach. Central.
We'd like to thank the City of Portland for allowing us to be here right now. And I'd like to thank our coach and our parents for supporting us the whole way. We'd also like to thank you for dedicating a day to us.
We're glad that we were able to get all the way through to the finals, and we thank the State of Oregon for the opportunity to enjoy our passions in this great sport. Thank you.
Go Rams.
And also your coach, And Coach Steve Vanchetta was also selected as Coach of the Year by the Mount Hood Conference. So both teams can be proud of their coaches and their schools.
So you get the day off, the rest of the day off, when you have a proclamation honoring you.
I wish.
But just check the fine print at the bottom, though. Well, thank you, folks, so much. We're really proud of you, and we really appreciate the fact that you'd take the time to come down today. Let's thank give you. These young people a hand.
Thank you.
Now, you may want to stay or you may want to leave. The rest of it isn't quite as exciting, the city council, but so it's your choice. Contrary to what Commissioner Salzman said, I suspect they're going to be needing you back at school.
Do you play soccer?
No, my grandson does.
Yeah, we didn't have it. That goes all the energy out of the room. What grade is Cole? Is he? He seems big for a second. But I lose track.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1454, request of Steve Holman to address council regarding late night or all night drop-in for the homeless.
Yes, thank you for being here.
No problem.
Go ahead and take a seat.
Sure.
And when you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Stephen Holman, and I'm here for a late night drop-in for the homeless. And the reason I come before you guys is I wrote several different speeches, but I decided I'd just speak from my heart. I've lived on the streets of Portland for 7 months. I work a full-time job, and when I get off work, I sleep on the streets and go to work the next day. Everything in this city operates during the daytime. So people who have full-time jobs, they get off at 5 and 6 o'clock. There's nowhere else for us to go. There's nowhere to get cleaned up for the next day. Nowhere to get food. There's nothing. Therefore, if you can only imagine what it feels like to walk around with sheetrock on you for 4 days straight until you can find a place on your day off to go and get cleaned up for the next day. It's been very difficult for me because of this, and that's the reason I come before you, because this would benefit the city a great deal, especially for those who want to work and get themselves off the streets. Therefore, not be able to eat for several days at a time because there's nowhere to go. Honestly, it's just like that. Everything operates between the hours and 7 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And I don't know. To me, in my heart, it's a big, big problem that we have here in Portland, having everything in the day and just never having anything at night for those people that are really trying. Therefore it stands, I've used most of the services that the city of Portland has to offer. Be right now, I'll tell you, I have a voucher for $900 to get first month's rent and deposit for an apartment, but I can't find one. But that's the reason I came before you guys. I brought some people that are going to talk a little more about it. This drop-in would be, it would offer showers for those who need them in the evening, maybe some washer and dryers to clean up your clothes so you can stay clean and look nice to go to work for the next following days, and maybe pass out blankets to those who don't have them. And it's pretty much all I have to say.
I don't disagree with your need for a drop-in shelter, but I'm a little bit... Are you working full-time?
Yes, I am. And working on a second job, too.
I mean, two things. I mean, I think if you stop by my office, we'd be glad to talk with you about some of the housing options, because I think if you're working full-time, there's some ways to go about getting some housing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I didn't come here for myself. Yeah, I just wrote a lot of different speeches, and I just decided, you know, I would speak from my heart rather than reading something off a piece of paper.
Okay. If you talk about the more general need, I agree completely.
Oh, absolutely. I just really, I mean, as I experienced this on the way down, that's just one thing that I was like, man, you know, I really wish for this. And I don't know, I decided to bring it to city council, you know, because I just thought it would benefit the city in a great deal, you know, to really give people a place to go rather than sitting on a street corner.
Well, the council has put into the Portland Development Commission's budget a substantial line item to build an access center for homeless people.
Absolutely.
It will be located on what's often called the Dirty Duck Block, which is the kind of half-vacant block when you come right off the steel bridge coming into Old Town.
Absolutely.
We hope to have it under construction by fall. Probably it'll take another year to build, so we're a little bit out. But that's the strategy. How late it will be open at night and other things will have to be negotiated with the provider. But we will have a place with showers and room to sit. And
that would make wonders. It's just we don't need any more things during the day. I mean, it's just night. I mean, that's really where the need is, the way I feel about it.
Well, the other issue is the shelters do not allow people to stay during the day. So that's for those who are not working.
Absolutely.
We do actually need some space daytime too. So, but the access center could be open at night. It will be available. So that will be a matter of kind of figuring out how it all works.
Yeah, the way I feel about that, though, is a day shelters. No offense, tend to make people lazy because you should be looking for work during the daytime. I don't mean that in a rude way, but
thanks. Thank you.
You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please read the next.
1455, request of Ken Lloyd to address council regarding late night or all night drop-in for the homeless.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, my name is Ken Lloyd. I'm director of two very small nonprofits in downtown Portland. One is One for One PDX. We're known as the Blue Bag or the Sock People. Our budget for socks alone is $300 a month. We hand out socks, clothing, food, friendship, cell phones, ID. Mostly we rekindle dreams that have died and create future for our friends as best we can with the size that we are. Second nonprofit is Home PDX. Technically, we're a church. We meet on Sundays with a meal and 4 hours of time spent together with our friends without houses. Housing First is a really laudable goal, and I just heard about what you had said, which is a wonderful thing. But in the meantime, and for our friends without houses, the meantime can be very mean. We have our friends living on the streets. Stephen Holman is one of them, who are working hard to get off of the street, yet do not have options that are available to the rest of us. And so I just want to advocate for something today, tonight, for our friends, where they can go and get clean and get warm and get a meal or a snack, something like that. I believe that the measure of a society and the measure of a culture is how we treat those that have less than we do, less love, less housing, less money, less jobs. And so I've noticed that the city of Portland is a city that cares for its people. And I'm just saying it would be wonderful if we could do something this winter on an interim basis. Thank you.
Could you leave the contact information for you with Carla, the council clerk there?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Please read the next.
1456, request of Wayne Stump to address council regarding the need for more adequate shelter for the homeless.
Good morning.
Could you please give it to the council clerk? Thank you. Thank you for for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Wayne Stump, and I've been a resident of Portland for 5 years. I've been a homeless advocate since 2002, amateur, and recently I've been writing a book called Homeless for a Reason, and it suggests that all homeless people have a reason, even if it's only a legitimate reason to themselves. They have a reason for being homeless. And most of the information that we're finding about housing is permanent housing. It takes so many months sometimes to acquire this housing that obviously we need to provide them with shelter in the meantime, waiting for their housing. The drop-in shelters, I've indicated in my testimony, the drop-in shelters are usually overlooked as necessary or practical for their homeless survival. But what researchers are finding out and advocates are finding out is this is the places where we can connect with them one-on-one. And a lot of them that come in off the street just for a place to hang out, they end up finding a positive environment that they look forward to each week or each day that they go there. And it actually offers them positive alternatives to some of the things that they get into when they're out on the street, out of boredom or from the cold. They're turning to alcohol and drugs in these environments, in the temporary drop-in shelters especially. We're just trying to advocate to give more attention to the necessity that drop-in shelters are equally as important. And there's quite a bit of research available, but recently the homeless, the Sisters of the Road Cafe published their book called Voices from the Streets. And it's very extensive. It's a very extensive research project, and I'm sure the committee is familiar with the book. And they've went in depth and in detail with over 500 homeless people doing one-on-one interviews. And a lot of that research and information was available and made possible because of temporary drop-in shelters such as this. So that's my proposition, is that you just try to give consideration to some of the drop-in shelter ideas that are going to be coming before you. And my main topic of my book and my research is the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. And it suggests that chronic homelessness is a more pressing issue than other forms of homelessness, because most of those people have special needs, mental and physical disabilities that prevent them from participating in a lot of the other programs. So I thank you for listening to our opinions, and I know you have a lot of on your agendas today. I appreciate being here. Thank you. My contact information is available there.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Is that the communications? Okay, we'll move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? There's been a request from Robert Cowan to pull items 1462 and 1463. Those will be pulled, and at the end of the regular agenda, we'll hear those issues.
Mayor, we've also had a request to pull 1473.
1473. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time, certain.
Item 1457, update from Metro on making the greatest place initiative.
Thank you, Councillor Robert Liberty, for being here. We appreciate it. You're a frequent visitor. If you'd like, we could try to find a space for you here to use for... Thanks for being here, Robert.
Thank you for having me here. This is an opportunity to brief the commissioners about Metro's planning efforts and why you should be interested in those efforts. Why be interested in Metro's planning efforts? First, it relates to the city's own goals for new families, new housing, and new jobs over the next quarter century. It's directly related to discussions about major transportation investments and funding for the region. It directly relates to the city's own urban growth boundary expansion areas in outer southeast and northwest. It's an opportunity to talk about the relationship between local and regional infrastructure, which is a long, fancy term for a wide range of public improvements from roads and sewers to libraries and parks, and how they serve regional objectives as well as local objectives. And it's directly related to the city's efforts to be a leader in reducing its contributions to global climate change, and that's because urban form is a primary determinant of how we travel and therefore what kind of emissions go into the atmosphere. So, as a polar bear says, that counting on the city of Portland. We started out regionally in 1994-95 with developing this plan, and it had these components that are familiar to you, urban growth boundary, as do all cities in the state of Oregon, and a set of areas where we want to focus development, including the central city, which is not just downtown, but the South Waterfront, the Pearl District, Central East Side Industrial District, Lloyd District, and Goose Hollow. And then a set of regional centers. Portland has one, Gateway, very favorably located at the intersections of major transportation routes. And then 30 town centers. I think Portland has about seven of those. As well as, you see little orange spots are light rail station areas. There's, by my count, about 40 or 50 in the region, either built or will be built, that are not in the other centers. And then main streets and quarters, which are the gold lines and purple lines. And I'm going to come back to this. So these are the areas where we thought growth should occur. How have we done so far? Well, I always think of former Governor Kitzhaber's comment about 10 years ago that there are two things Oregonians hate, sprawl and density. And this contradiction, the city of Portland is well aware of over conflicts. I remember personally about row houses northwest, the Southwest Community Plan. But despite inevitable controversy, some of which has been, I think, quite helpful, the dialogue, progress has been made. This image cannot be shown for almost any other region, metropolitan region in the United States. You can actually pick out the urban growth boundary on this photograph, this photomosaic photograph, and that represents a choice made through democratic means about how our entire region grows. And you can see that boundary without any lines drawn in. There it is, except for the expansion area in the southeast. That is remarkable, and it accounts, it's part of the reason that we have grown so differently. These five cities, including Portland, all grew about the same in the 1990s, but they grew very differently, Charlotte, Columbus, Orlando, San Antonio. And so the amount of growth in Charlotte, for example, that would support transit, that's sort of the traditional urban density, like the neighborhood I grew up in Northeast, that was only 7% of Charlotte's growth, two-thirds of the growth in Orlando. And I'm talking about the regions, not the cities, the entire metro areas, 88% in Portland. At the other end of the spectrum, what's called exurban here, which you can think of as 2, 3, 5-acre lots, that was 45% of the growth in Charlotte, 12% in Orlando, and just 1% in our region. Even our neighbor to the north, Vancouver, Washington, which also has an urban growth boundary, and Washington State has a program similar to Oregon's, had a very different pattern of growth in its rural areas. Each of these red dots represents 10 new people located in that spot in the 1990s, so dramatically different countryside development than we've had here. And the consequence of this is that the purple line or the pink line down at the bottom represents the amount of driving we do every day compared to other comparable cities, and that's stabilized. And part of that has to do with the fact that we are more compact on our growth. It's easier to connect people with shorter trips, and that's good for the planet. What form has growth taken in the last decade? Well, these different colors around the urban growth boundary indicate the expansions that were done in about 10 years ago and then fairly early in this century, 2002, 2004, and 5. So we added 23,000 acres. That's a chunk of land, by the way, 40 square miles. Since all these expansions since 1997, 23,490 acres, there serve only about 6,500 people. This is very important. So we think about growth in the United States at the edge, and that's where population growth then occurs, in new development at the edge. That's not what's happening. In fact, in the expansion areas since 2000, the growth since 2000, we've had about 126,000 more people in the three counties. Well over 90% of that is inside our urban growth boundary. That's 20,000 acres of those expansions. And how many housing units have been permitted there? 138. 20,000 acres, serving 345 people estimated. So we're already growing in a very different way. And the old discussions about the urban growth plan are going to change because that's not how growth is occurring. By the way, we hear this continuously. If we just allowed more land in the boundary, we would make housing affordable. We added 20,000 acres to the boundary, and home prices went up $100,000. So we have a problem with affordability. It's not going to be fixed by more land. Why is the growth occurring inside the urban growth boundary and in the city of Portland? And Portland's been getting about a third of the housing permits over the last 10 years. Well, people want to live here. It's kind of obvious. That's market demand. The other reason is growth at the edge is very expensive, and we don't have any way of funding it. The North Bethany expansion area, it was added in 1997, I think, it's about 800 acres. Just the arterial road network cost is about $200 million. It's a lot of money just for roads. You may have seen this article. There's been subsequent ones about development of the urban growth boundary in the southeast area. We simply don't have money. So what people are beginning to realize is that to have new subdivisions at the edge, someone's taxes have to go up or fees have to go up. It's pretty practical. We don't have a solution to that. That's going to be more intensive growth inside our existing urban areas, including certainly the city of Portland. So now what happens? Well, Metro, about 3 years ago, decided that rather than rethinking our plan for growth, our region's plan for growth, we really wanted to move forward with implementing it. And that is now a project we're calling the Making the Greatest Place. It has a couple of elements. Investing in our communities is trying to promote the kind of growth we want in the regional centers. Those includes the station areas, the town centers, the regional centers, the central city, main streets and quarters. And we have to find the infrastructure to do that. There's an assumption that Portland has it made, that all the streets are paved, all the facilities are tip-top shape, and when you've gone into a pothole in inner southeast that you're worried about the water coming up through the floorboards, you know that's not true. We still need investment in our communities, and we need to talk about this regionally because this is not just a local issue, it's a regional issue. Regional transportation plan, the Metro Council's thought about this quite a bit, and we're going through a 2 to 3 year update of both our federal transportation plan, federally required one in state. Commissioner Adams has been participating in those discussions and knows that we've begun to think about transportation as not the ends, but the means. How we spend the money determines how the region grows, how the city grows, and that we ought to think about the investments in that context, not just we're going to fix congestion, but community building investments. Performance-based growth management, I hope this becomes a rap song and lyric, but it's really very important, and that is we've spent an inordinate amount of time talking about, well, how much land do we need, where do we add land to the boundary, how do we analyze that? That's not where the action is now. The action is on building communities inside the boundary we have now, and we want to think about making additions to the land supply that's more thoughtful, that's an integrated approach that looks at the quality of development inside the boundary, not just adding land. Finally, urban and rural reserves, and we look forward to having, we hope Gil Kelly serve on the committee that Metro's created to talk about identifying lands that will not be urbanized. Rural reserves, those are lands that are important for farming, for forestry, as natural resources, and the areas where expansion occur over 50-year time horizon, 50 years, and try and develop a process to kind of meter that supply in a way that, again, builds great places in the existing urban area as well as the additional areas. Let's look at Portland specifically. Here's the central city, and these are obviously not the mapped boundaries, but just icons, and the regional center. So one regional center, central city. These are the town centers under the regional plan in Portland, six. And then there's a whole series of station areas, including ones that will be on the lines under construction and being built. So there's lots of opportunity. In addition, there are all these pink and yellow lines, which are main streets and corridors. So where would the next 1 million residents in our region live? We think a quarter or more will go to other cities, Clark County, but also cities in Yamhill County, North Marion County. So I just did this exercise very quickly to figure out, can we accommodate this growth? So if we assume we need about 375,000 new homes with two people in them, that's a little conservative, but it's pretty simple. Here's what we have in the region for acreage. It doesn't add up to a lot of the land, but it has a lot of capacity. So as an exercise, when we had this debate at Metro in September between a quarters-oriented approach and a centers-oriented approach, it's not that we're going to pick one, but just it was interesting to think about how you could do this. So if we thought about downtown Portland, the regional and town centers across the region, what could be accomplished? Could we accommodate the growth there? Well, here's a simple way of doing it. 65,000 new homes in the central city. Metro's own forecast suggests it could be between 25 and 56,000 new homes by 2035. So this is not out of reach. The seven regional centers at 15,000 each, it's about double what's gone into the Pearl District. Do that over 30 years. 3,500 of the regional centers and so on, you actually get 375,000 homes without any expansion of the boundary, no infill other than in these sites. Challenging, but possible. What about corridors, places like Hawthorne Division, 82nd Avenue, Southwest Barber? How much could they handle? Well, I used a development that we're very proud of in Milwaukee. It's won a couple awards, North Main Place, which has affordable housing units, high-end townhomes and condos, so a whole income range, 94 units. We have 400 miles of these streets like 82nd and Barber and Division. That's 800 miles of street frontage. So if you were to, say, pick a place like this, and this happens to be 82nd Avenue, and if you built one of those every 5 years on each 1 mile stretch of the region's quarters and main streets at five block intervals, after 25 years, you've got 10 of them on every mile, and there would still be plenty of spaces for other uses, right? Pretty simple. Well, it really adds up fast. 94 homes times 10 projects per mile, 940 homes per mile times 400 miles. That's all the growth in the region accommodated on the corridors without any growth downtown the centers. We have lots of opportunities to make the community better and accommodate growth. And, of course, there's always this alternative, and this is the forecasted expansion areas. This is trend. It is not destiny. So your leadership is going to be critical, and the discussion you have about what kind of additional homes and jobs you want to locate in the city, how to address the issue of housing choice and poverty. We know that poverty is relocating, and that's because of where housing is available. And most housing, low-income housing, is market housing, market rate. That has big implications for Gresham and the city of Portland, as well as some places to the west. How do you fund long-term infrastructure? And how do you make it work to implement this strategy? What about transportation investments? Commissioner Adams has talked about a streetcar network. That would work with a corridor strategy. Focus on connecting regional centers with high-speed, higher-speed light rail is more of a center strategy. Do you do both? Metro has said we're going to forsworn any effort to promote infill in single-family neighborhoods, but I live in one, and there's infill going on. And that would be part of your strategy to think about as well. But again, I think we've illustrated there's many ways of doing this to make the place better, to actually address global concerns and local concerns at the same time. So these are questions I'll leave with you. How does Portland want to grow? What's its role in the region? How do you reconcile that with your plans for investments in transportation? And you're updating both your downtown plan and comprehensive plan. And we hope that you'll see this as an opportunity to engage in those tasks with a regional perspective, because Portland needs to succeed just as much as all the other parts of the region. And you're certainly up to it. And that polar bear is counting on you. Thank you.
Good presentation.
Yes. Thank you. And I did receive the letter from David Bragdon regarding Gil, and we're going to be processing that. So thank you very much, and thanks, Gil, for participating in that.
Well, of course, as you know, one of the issues, Robert, is design. I mean, that's what I've learned since I've been here, after having been in Salem and talking about the broader concept of growth boundary density, and then coming here and living through John Kitzhaber's quote. I'm very convinced that one of the ways that we ameliorate the impact of higher density is through higher design standards. So we've had our smart house program. Gil just conducted the smart multifamily.
Courtyard housing.
Yeah. Courtyard housing. So I think that's something we have to focus on as well.
I think that's a great point, and we know my council district goes out to 148th and Northeast Halsey, and there's a lot of development that's gone on that's been kind of harsh in neighborhoods that don't have sidewalks, and so they're getting sort of all the burdens of growth without many of the benefits that go with it. And I know it's a challenge to fund that infrastructure, but I do think design's important. One of the problems, though, is that people who are building the housing, the kind of skills and training and background, and finding a way to make it a good design, affordable design as well. And we're all aware of that, but I think that is very important in helping people to flourish and not see that those additional requirements is just making it tougher for them to do their business. But I appreciate both the design competitions you proposed. I've been interested in one, maybe Portland would be interested in joining with Metro on the $100,000 house.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we do that and with a sufficient profit margin that people will want to build them?
If I could, Mayor, I would just add that I've been participating in the Metro discussions for many years now, and the issue the core issue that these conversations tend to revolve around is the degree to which and how we will accommodate urban growth in the future. And that tends to be framed by how much at the edge will we grow and where. How much do we need to expand the boundary? And it's been frustrating for the city of Portland because we've been advocates of looking first at our existing centers. And so I appreciate the way that Robert's reframed the question here. And I think we want to take a thoughtful look at his challenge in the Portland plan process. This is just spot on what we need to deal with, and we will need to look at those questions about infrastructure efficiency and the design issues that Commissioner Leonard just raised. My personal thought about this going into it is that we have a lot of untapped capacity in Portland that can use existing infrastructure investments and actually make a better place, but we have to be very, very thoughtful about how we approach that. My sense is that Robert sort of put out a menu of approaches, and we'll probably use many items off the menu, downtown or central city growth, corridor growth, town center growth, without needing to sort of tromp into the single family neighborhoods and upzone. But that's the challenge that we need to look at. And of course, the horizon year for our plan is in some ways sort of the framed by the global warming debate, which is a 2050 landmark year when we need to have stabilized global warming. And when you look at the population projections out that far, it's probably roughly a doubling of the metro area population, so conceivably a doubling of the city population. So we need to be very thoughtful about how we go about that conversation. But I think it's quite achievable, and I think it hopefully the polar bear will thank us in the end for our work.
Now, if I may add one thing, is that I'm very aware of the controversies that have revolved around density. In fact, I was asked to, of all things, go to Vancouver, British Columbia to talk to their planning commission about density. And I said, why would you want me to come from Portland to Vancouver? And they really wanted to talk about politics and political response to these issues. And one of the things that's obvious is that all the controversies that have gone on since the row houses, John's Landing, Northwest Portland, the Southwest Community Plan, controversies outside Portland, Milwaukee, is that the civic infrastructure has gone up with each of those debates. It's hard-won gain in civic capital. But people and neighborhoods are very sophisticated. They understand the strategy, they know what it's for, and they want to harness it in a way that works for them. And I think we should really reach out to people and say, how do you make it work? And start with, you know, what you need and what you want rather than the numbers as the driver. But I think we can go a long way. We are much better positioned than other metropolitan regions, and this city is, than others, because of the level of sophistication by people in neighborhoods. Yeah. They get it. They want to make it work.
Of course, the other issue is how do you take maximum advantage of vacant space so that people with kids come to populate our Portland schools that have seen a dramatic decrease in population. So we're trying to wrestle with that as well. And I appreciated your observations about the development along corridors, but I'm not sure that would draw people with the kids that we're trying to get to populate Portland schools so we don't have further erosion of our kind of base upon which we get our funding from the state for the schools. I mean, it's a.
I think it was Greg Baldwin. I made a comment to him about that, and we know that in the city of Vancouver, British Columbia, in the Falls Creek development, they assumed there wouldn't be children. High rises. Now they're retrofitting daycare centers and schools because there are families with children. So we don't. The people's preferences and where they want to live is obviously changing. We know because Portland's being resettled, but not with kids. So I think that's an excellent question to think about it. But we may not need to use the same assumptions about the kind of homes people want with kids. Mm-hmm. A safe environment, a place for kids to play, a good school, that can take many forms.
And also one reason in the courtyard housing competition that we chose the lot configuration and the zoning districts we did is that sometimes those are just off the corridors, so they're in areas zoned for moderate density but mm-hmm. are not necessarily on the main street. Some of them are, but many of them are not. So we think there probably are opportunities at varying densities for
so
families.
We're thinking about that as we're doing it. That's good.
I would just add one other thing, which is it's very fortunate that that we are updating our major plans at the same time that Metro is updating its plan. And so it's a great coincidence, and we want to take maximum advantage of that. So we'll probably be back in front of the council several times during the progress on both of those efforts to update you. We're going to be working very closely with Metro staff in sort of coming to terms with projections and with some of the scenario building that that Robert referred to, so that it's working for both of our purposes. And if the council so designates me, I'm happy to serve on this Urban and Rural Reserves Committee, because that's really talking kind of about the ultimate form of the region, and really this question about how much comes in and how much goes out, and sort of what the metering process is for those outside lands, which has big implications for us and for regional investment to help our centers as well as, potential new development at the edges. So it's a conversation we need to be involved in.
Thank you, and we'll leave you with some material because I know you don't get enough to read in the daily course of business.
I thought last time you brought something in, and if we read it, we wouldn't have to read anything else.
I don't remember making that promise, Mr. Mayor, and I certainly will not make that promise again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Thank you, Gil. It's just a presentation. There's no council action. So go ahead and read the next.
Item 1458, accept the recommended design for the Southwest Corbett Traffic Calming Project Phase 3 and direct implementation of the project.
Commissioner Adams.
All right. If we could have Jim and staff come forward. Southwest Corbett Avenue is classified as a local service street but functions as a neighborhood collector. Experiencing average traffic volumes of 4,500 vehicles a day and speeds over 30 miles an hour. The Portland Office of Transportation, with the support of this city council, allocated $150,000 for traffic calming improvements on Southwest Corbett. PDOT convened a 7-member working group and held 2 open houses to receive community feedback and guidance during the design development of this project. And the South Portland Neighborhood Association unanimously approved the project you're going to hear today at its November 7th meeting. And with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Mahan. I'm with the Office of Transportation, and I'm the project manager for the Corbett Traffic Calming Project. And as Commissioner Adams mentioned, I'm here today to bring forward a resolution to accept the recommended design for the project and to direct the Office of Transportation to implement the improvements over the coming year. But before I go into the design, I just wanted to provide some background information on the project and talk a bit about our process. So Southwest Corbett Avenue lies within the South Portland neighborhood, a neighborhood bounded by major arterials such as Southwest Barber Boulevard and NATO Parkway, and major regional connectors such as Interstate 5 and Interstate 405. And as such, Corbett is experiencing higher traffic volumes than normal or would be anticipated for a local service street.
I think we lost your PowerPoint.
Oh,
there it is.
Do we have it?
Yep.
Okay. So recognizing the impacts that this transportation infrastructure can have on the neighborhood, PDOT has been working to implement traffic calming measures for the last 10 years in the area, and this project is actually the third and final phase of improvements planned. This project has been a long-standing priority for local residents and businesses, and is definitely something that the South Portland neighborhood has pushed for. They would like to see Corbett, and we would as well, like to see Corbett return to functioning like a local service street so that residents and children can move about safely. This project was identified as a Tier 1 priority project in the Portland Aerial Tram Final Recommendations and Report, which was adopted by City Council in June of 2004. And it's also been identified as a project in the Capital Improvement Program. $150,000 of general transportation revenue has been budgeted for this project, and as such, the project is fully funded. A bit about the current conditions that we're seeing on Corbett. So there's an overwhelming number of vehicles on Corbett each day, upwards of 4,500 cars a day on average. We're seeing speeds over 30 miles per hour. When we went out into the neighborhood and talked with residents, we heard about auto conflicts, crashes, pedestrian safety issues, large freight trucks traveling along Corbett, unsafe conditions for bicyclists, and wayfinding issues, so many lost drivers in their neighborhood. And a bit about our planning process. We kicked this project off in July of this year. We convened a 7-member working group, or Citizens Advisory Committee, and they provided input and identified the issues on Corbett and agreed upon a public process. We held 2 public open houses that were well attended by community members, neighbors, and business owners. And then the working group, following those open houses, met over the last 5 months to shape and refine the design as necessary. We presented the final design to the Neighborhood Association in November, where the board unanimously approved the design and issued a letter of support to City Council, and that letter should be in front of you, endorsing the design and the project. And here's the final design. The actual project area is from Southwest Hamilton in the south to Southwest Grover in the north. And the proposed design includes a mix of calming improvements, which includes curb extensions, raised crosswalks, median islands, and speed tables. And we will also be reducing the speed limit to 25 miles per hour. And in addition to our improvements, we are planning on placing wayfinding signage to the north and south of the project area to minimize misdirected trips into their neighborhood. And next,
I couldn't read what those signs.
Oh, sorry. The red routes just indicate where we will be placing signs, and it'll be signage that indicates Central City downtown or how to get to the interstates. So here we are today asking Council to pass a resolution accepting the design of this project, and that will allow us to go into final design and engineering work this winter and kick off construction in July of this year. And that concludes my presentations. I believe we have some community members here to testify, but before I call them up, are there any questions that I can answer?
I guess I'm curious why we're focusing between Grover and Hamilton only and not further south on Corbett as well.
So this is the third phase. The second phase of calming focused on Corbett further south near the commercial areas. So that was lower Corbett. And that it's already been completed, okay. Yes. And then this third phase is just being started now because we finally have the money for it. Yeah.
So there have been calming projects south of Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the first phase was on Virginia near Taylor's Ferry, and the second was on Lower Corbett near Boundary. Yes. Okay. So here today we have Ken Love, the president of the South Portland Neighborhood Association, Jennifer Daniluk, local resident and owner of Ross Island Grocery. We have Christopher Dorn, a resident who was also on our working group, and Lee Bueller, a local resident. So would you guys like to come up?
Could you get an extra?